That soothing, unruffled beat from Ray Lynch's Clouds Below Your Knee signals that it's Thursday night, 10 o'clock, and time for So What's Your Story? The only program originating in Houston devoted entirely to storytelling, right here on commercial-free, listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. The coolest place on your dial where we spotlight a variety of tellers, from starters to stars who share at least one thing in common. Each is an exceptional person who takes us on profound and sometimes fanciful treks with remarkable stories, from heart-rending narratives to enchanting folk tales, and then return us safely to the present. I'm your host, Dr. Hank Rubichek, Professor of Communication at the University of Houston Downtown, along with Roxy Russell, charged with working the boards, and step in just a bit. You know, sanctioning the rich diversity that dots the landscape of our city as well as the global community is the very core of Pacifica's mission. And the revival of storytelling reflects the spirit of unity among human beings because it's an art form that exists in part for keeping alive the traditions and customs which surround the human experience. The lush and vibrant ingredients that create a society's collection of stories, particularly folk tales and myths, are often done brilliantly, but few cultures do myths and folk tales better than the Irish. And we brought you some of the best Irish tellers in the state on So What's Your Stories, tellers like Maxine Lennon and Jay Staley. You probably remember them from earlier shows, and tonight, another superlative teller, Susan Gallagher, who's been on the show a few years ago when it was called Storytime, and has returned to grace our studio and enhance all of our lives with the depth and detail that only she can bring to the Irish experience. Susan grew up listening to traditional tales in the Flatbush section of Brooklyn in an Irish-American family in which the beauty of language was deeply valued. She's performed as a teller and presented workshops in many venues, including schools, libraries, museums, and festivals. She believes stories have the power to heal, enlighten, and indeed transform. She's a longtime member of the Houston Storytellers Guild, former attorney, and a great sport for being here past her bedtime. Susan, welcome.
I'm so happy to be here. I know, it's late, isn't it?
We're all yawning. We're all yawning. It's hard. Well, we did the show at 6 a.m. on a Monday. People were up, people our age. Now we're all asleep. So, really? I mean, come on. We have to take a nap first. I'm so glad you're here. We've been wanting to do this for a while. Now, you used to be an attorney, and of course, I have to ask, did stories really help you in your law practice? You were a litigator.
Absolutely. Whether it's a judge or a jury, you have to be able to explain the facts of the case as a story.
I know. And, you know, many storytellers trace their life, their love for stories to childhood. And I know you and I were talking a little bit earlier, and you asked me how I got interested in storytelling. And, of course, through my grandparents, my grandmother in particular. And you experienced the same thing. What kind of stories did you have your parents share with you as a child?
I heard a lot of personal stories from my parents and my grandparents. And from my father's father, I heard a lot of folklore and a little bit from my mother's mother. So we heard a wide range of stories.
And there's so much to learn from Irish folk tales and myths, as we know. For example, I know that Irish tales can be categorized into cycles.
This is true.
And the story that you are about to share is from the Ulster cycle. And I know it's virtually impossible to do this, Susan, but in about 30 or 45 seconds, help us understand what the Ulster cycle is.
This is a collection of heroic tales that are interconnected, many of which feature the hero Cuchulainn. Mm-hmm. And they come from quite early, from the medieval period and earlier, and they originate from the northeast of Ireland, from the county of Ulster.
Fascinating. What are some of the other cycles? What are the other names?
There's the mythological cycle, mm-hmm. the Finn cycle, and the cycle of the kings that is also called the historical cycle.
Right. And this one is about Cuchulainn.
That's correct.
Right.
Sure is.
Share your story with us, please.
Long ago in Ireland, in the kingdom of Ulster, there lived a young hero named Cuchulainn. He was so great a warrior that he first took up arms when he was but 7 years of age, and he continued to amaze the people of Ulster year after year. As he grew towards manhood, all of the women loved him for the skill of his feats, for the lightness of his leaps and the weight of his wisdom, for the sweetness of his speech and the beauty of his face, and for all his gifts. They loved him even for his faults, for he was too young too brave and too beautiful. "We must find him a fitting wife of his own," the men said, "for our wives and daughters are making far too much of him." "Indeed, he must have a wife," said the elders, "for he must father children who will be the future champions of our people." And so messengers were sent out to search for a wife for Cuchulainn, but as it happens, Cuchulainn had in mind a woman for himself. It was Ymir, the daughter of Forgall the Wily, and so he set out to seek her. It happened that Ymir was sitting out in the garden with 50 young maidens, high-born maidens, and she was teaching them embroidery, for she was the most skillful needleworker. And when they heard the sounds of the chariot approaching, Ymir sent her sister Fiel to look, and Fiel stood up on a little rise of the land, and she called back to the women to say what she saw. She said, "I see a chariot drawn by two horses of great swiftness and speed and beauty, one black and one gray." "Oh, these must be Cuchulainn's two horses," Ymir thought, though she did not speak it aloud. "These must be the gray of Maha and black Sanglan." Then Fiel continued. She said, "I see a slender young driver, tall, freckled, red-headed, with a band of bronze around his forehead." And Ymir thought, "Oh, this is Loig, Cuchulainn's charioteer." And then Fiel said, "Oh, and behind him I see a handsome, dark-haired warrior. He is richly dressed in a red cloak, five-fringed cloak, fastened with a brooch of gold. The shield flung over his shoulders is purple and decorated with silver and gold. And fastened to the side of the chariot is a blood-red, hand-fretted spear that has a mettlesome blade." "Cuchulainn," Ymir thought, "it could only be him." When the two warriors pulled up the chariot by the women, Ymir gave a courteous greeting. She said, "May the road be smooth before you."
"May you be safe from harm," Cuchulainn answered.
And the two began to speak together, but they spoke in riddles that no one else could understand. They spoke of their lives and their aspirations. They spoke of what they valued and what they disdained. And finally Cuchulainn said that he wished to marry her. "We are very young to marry," she said, "and I could never abandon my sister all alone in the fortress of Forgall."
"Fair is the plain of noble yoke," said Cuchulainn, meaning that it would be a beautiful thing if he could marry her.
And when Ymir answered him, her words were intended to tell him secretly of what he must accomplish before they could marry. She said, "No one comes to this plain who does not first stay alert from spring to winter, from winter to fall."
"Fair is the plain of noble yoke," Cuchulainn said again, and Ymir said,
"No one comes to this plain who does not first master the sword feat of slaying 3 times 9 men with one stroke of the sword whilst leaving one man standing in their midst."
"Fair is the plain of noble yoke," Cuchulainn said a third time, and she said,
"No one comes to this plain who does not first slay his enemies in their hundreds at every ford of the river from Skemmen to Ban Cuin."
"It is said and done," Cuchulainn said.
"It is offered and accepted," she replied, and so the two were betrothed. And as Cuchulainn rode away in his chariot with Loig, he said to his charioteer, "Oh, surely this is my choice above all the women of the world, for who else could understand my riddled speech, much less answer me in the same cloaked manner?" Well, the 50 young women who had witnessed this might not have understood what was said, but they certainly did want to talk over the two handsome young strangers who had come to visit, so soon enough Forgall the Wily heard of the visit.
"It must be that mad boy from Owen Mahe," he said, "and now my daughter has fallen in love with him, but I shall hinder their plans."
And so he disguised himself as a Gaulish merchant, and he took himself to Owen Maha, and he put it about that no warrior could consider himself truly accomplished unless he had first studied with Skatha, the warrior woman, in the Isle of Shadows. So wild and fierce were Skatha and her people that Forgall doubted Cuchulainn could survive the journey, let alone the training. Cuchulainn, for his part,
recognized Forgel and knew his intentions, but he undertook the journey nonetheless. And he stayed alert from winter to spring and from spring to fall. And in the end, he learned all Skaffa could teach him and became her most brilliant pupil. But while Cuchulainn was away, Forgel arranged a marriage for his daughter with a neighboring king. The king came to Forgel's stronghold with a retinue of 12 chariot chiefs, and Forgel prepared a great feast at which the betrothal would be made. He called for Ymir to come out with the intention that she would speak to her intended and sit beside him at the feast. But Ymir did not sit. Instead, she stood before her intended. She placed her hands one on each of his cheeks. She fixed her gaze upon him, and she said, "I swear on my life that it is Cuchulainn who I love, and no one else. My father is opposed to the match, but if you value your life and honor, you will not force me to marry you against my will." Hearing this, the neighboring king pursued the betrothal no more, out of concern for his honor and also out of dread for the rage of Cuchulainn. Well, when Cuchulainn returned from his training, there was a great welcome before him at Owen Maha, but try though he might, he could not even see Ymir, so carefully did Forgel keep her guarded, and so strong were the defenses. So after a year's time, Cuchulainn decided that he would go and take her by force. He stepped into his scythed chariot and drove off to the stronghold of Forgel. And once he arrived there, he made the great hero's leap that he had learned from Skaffa and cleared the two outer walls of the fortress in one bound. Landing inside, he performed the sword feat of slaying 3 times 9 men with one blow, leaving only one man in the midst of each group alive, and those that he left alive were the brothers of Ymir. But as to Forgel, her father, he decided to make his escape by leaping from the outer walls of the stronghold, and instead fell to his death. So finally, Cuchulainn gathered up Ymir and her sister Fil, and they went away outside the fortress, climbed into his chariot, and each of the women brought with her treasure of silver and gold, and away they rode to Owen Maha. But they were not out of danger. For Forgel's sister had gathered up the men and was pursuing them intent on vengeance, and they were gaining on Cuchulainn's heavily laden chariot. So whenever they came to the ford of a river, Cuchulainn would cross and let the two women out, and then he would cross back and give battle to his enemies. And he vanquished his foes in their hundreds at every ford of the river from Skemmen to Ban Cuin. And when Cuchulainn and Ymir and Fil arrived back at Owen Maha, they were given a great welcome. And Fil was accepted into the ranks of women there, where she lived long and respected. And as to Cuchulainn and Ymir, their long and difficult courtship was over. They were married, and they lived together as husband and wife for the length of their days, and were honored and respected among the people of Ulster. And so ends the tale of the wooing of Emer.
Beautiful, beautiful. You know, it always knocks me out the way that you tell these stories, because they're so detailed and they're descriptive and they unfold so beautifully. How do you make these stories your own? I know you do an awful lot of research, but these are, and I want our listeners to know how very difficult it is to tell these kind of stories, because the language, for example, it always strikes me how formal the language is.
Yes,
so,
it
for
is.
Example, you were saying earlier before the show that in Irish, we don't say, "I'm angry." We say, "The anger is upon us."
Indeed.
Right?
Yes, that's true.
And that tone is a difficult one to maintain. But how do you, Susan, how do you make a story like this your own?
Well, I do love the language, and that's part of what I love about these stories. My problem is that it's all so fascinating to me. I could go on and on. So the biggest challenge really is cutting it down to a size that is tolerable to a modern English-speaking audience.
Yeah. How do you make that decision?
I just keep working at it. I cut out as much as I can, and then I tell it out loud to myself, and if it's too long, I cut it some more. For instance, the riddles of Cuchulainn and Emer go on for pages, pages and pages in the original manuscripts. Mm-hmm. And so I just pick out my favorites, the ones that make the story hold together, and go with them. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah, I want to talk about language and motifs in just a moment. But right now you are listening to Irish storyteller Susan Gallagher on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, and 90.3 in Livingston. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, with Roxy Russell. Tell us about the different motifs that took place in the story.
Well, this story has, of course, the motif of riddles, which we find in a lot of stories from a lot of different ethnicities. You think of the riddle of the Sphinx, even in Greek mythology, or the Japanese teaching koans, which are riddles. But something that's quite distinctive about these Irish riddles is that in medieval times, the scholars and the poets had very formal rules for making poetry. They had these very complicated internal rhymes that had to count the right number of syllables. So someone who was able to master and use this form of poetic speaking was a really high prestige, highly educated person, and that is indeed what the medieval manuscripts have Cuchulainn and Emer doing. So they were kind of showing off. It's kind of like a jazz musician nowadays who's improvising a really cool solo on the spot, and we would admire that ability. That's what they were doing with this verbal gymnastics.
Yeah, and motifs are different from themes. In other words, you know, sometimes we look at them interchangeably, but a motif is really very, very concrete. A theme is a little bit more abstract. So, for example, in the story that you just shared with us, what would be a theme versus one of the motifs that was used to substantiate that theme?
Well, the heroism of Cuchulainn is a theme that runs through these stories. Yeah. And this, of course, is part of a huge, long cycle. But this notion of Cuchulainn having these three faults of being too young, too brave, and too beautiful is a very poignant one. And in this case, it's a little humorous because all of the women are in love with him and people are annoyed. But this theme comes back over and over, and sometimes it's quite heartbreaking when he actually goes into battle and suffers the difficulty of warfare. That's a thread that runs through all of these stories and has a different tone each time it recurs.
Yeah. Irish folk tales. Roxy, what about you? You like Irish folk tales? What about leprechauns? You like leprechauns?
I enjoy...
Have you ever met a leprechaun?
I have not met a leprechaun.
Yeah. I understand they're not really nice people. Is that true, Maxine?
I've never met one.
Maxine, remember she was here and she said that, you know, let me tell you about leprechauns. They're really not nice people. So I just wanted to know if you've known any or if you see them in your dreams. Or
I want to say that I think I've met them.
Because we know you think strange things at night and I just didn't know if you ever saw a leprechaun.
Of leprechauns. No, I've never met a leprechaun.
What about a fairy? You ever meet a fairy?
I wish I've met a fairy.
Tooth fairy, any kind of fairy?
Many tooth fairy visits I have encountered.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about the elves? Keebler elves or anything?
I'm a big
fan. Elf is not Irish.
That's not.
I don't know why I throw that in there. It shows my ignorance, right?
Yeah.
But nevertheless, Keebler elves.
Keebler elves are my favorite kind of elves.
They are? Really?
Yes. Yeah.
And what about Lucky Charms?
I was not allowed to experience Lucky Charms.
Yeah. Well, you know, in Ireland, let's talk about fairies. I always do my homework. All of you know that. You know that there's some segue here. But fairies really means a spirit community. And I find these fascinating because in my own storytelling class, when students ask me what's a fairy, I tell them, good question. Let me figure that one out, because in their minds, fairy tales, fantasies, all have to have some sort of mythical character that they refer to as fairies very generically. And I tell them, no, that's not the case. A fairy is a spirit community. And in Ireland, I know that the belief is they live among us, right? They live among humans. Is that right?
Certainly, Maxine would say that, yes.
And often taking on human form, stories are told of humans who met fairies and went to live with them, never to return to their earthly lives. And I understand leprechauns aren't very nice either, so I just wanted to share that with you. So leprechauns aren't nice. Fairies are very interesting. And there could be one sitting right next to you, Roxy. We have no idea. They can take on many, 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 many forms. Right now, let's say what. Let's talk about what really are nice. Not leprechauns. Maybe I know you're looking at my friend next to you. Right, we're not talking about him. But let's talk about people that are nice. Let's talk about the Houston Storytellers Guild. They're nice people.
They are
no
nice
leprechauns
people.
There. Although no leprechauns.
But absolutely, they are the nicest people in town. So just get to their monthly story swaps held by the guild. And learn to tell and listen to stories while surrounded by the most supportive and encouraging people in town. Monthly story swaps are held the third Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the St. Andrew's House, located at 1811 Heights Boulevard. And check out the Houston Storytellers site at www.houstonstorytellers.org.
What's the matter with you tonight? What's the matter with you tonight? There's something wrong. You know, unfortunately, you're learning from me, and that's bad. You know, we have to teach you from an articulate person, but go ahead. The Houston Storytellers, yes.
The HoustonStorytellers.org for all the fun happenings. Like their annual Liars Contest.
And that's the truth.
On Saturday, April 5th.
Yep.
And visit us on So What's Your Stories Facebook page for information about storytelling. And please like us on your way out.
Like us a lot. Thank you, Roxy. You know, the Liars Contest is really more fun than the law allows. It really is.
Absolutely. It's hilarious.
Have you ever been contestant?
No, I'm not a very good liar, but I'm a great listener to the lies.
No wonder you're not a lawyer anymore. That really explains it, right? That's absolutely it. This is Hank Rubicek with Critical Side Click, Roxy Click. We're going to call you Click for now on Roxy Russell, and you are enjoying guest storyteller Susan Gallagher on So What's Your Story on KPFT 90.1 FM or KPFT.org for you onliners. But whatever route avenue you want to take, we certainly are glad that you are here. Susan, you believe that stories can heal. I know, and that's always something that is impressive to me, because I know stories really do. They do genuinely heal. There's something about them that allows us to feel something internal that other kinds of communication methods and mechanisms really don't allow us to do. And all I can say is that it must be the luck of the Irish, because tonight's Tip for the Teller, this is a segment where I pretend to know something about storytelling, and I answer a question from somebody out there in the listening audience, all three people who listen to us, one of whom is my mother probably. Roxy, who and what do we have tonight?
Well, Hank, Leona from Houston writes, Dr. Hank, I think your show is one of the best in town.
And I think I paid her to say that.
Really?
Very discerning.
Sure, yeah.
And I don't know who is funnier, you or Roxy.
Well, we know the answer to that.
You once said that stories can make us feel better, remember? Well, I feel better after telling stories, but remind me about the reason.
Remind me about the reason. Well, Leona, let's see. Okay, well, that's a terrific question. It really is, and it's an even better insight. And I think you know the reason, because stories remind us that we matter. In The Healing Art of Storytelling, a really wonderful book by Richard Stone, he identifies the term de-storification, which is the growing absence of the need for stories because of the growth of technology. You know, we think we have less need to interact with others, but in fact, we need to create spaces for stories. Times with family, friends, sharing the narratives that make us feel alive, useful, unique. We heal by connecting, by feeling, and by living. And I hope that makes sense, Leona. That's a terrific question. It really is. And if any of you have any other questions for me, I really would love you to ask them, because this is a great, great segment. Wonderful, wonderful. I'm going to ask Susan to weigh in on this in just a moment, because I know she has opinions about how stories heal. But if you have questions for me, Roxy, tell people what they need to do, please.
If you have questions you want Dr. Hank to answer on the air, or would like to be a guest on So What's Your Story, send your name, contact information, question, or story idea to ruby.story@gmail.com. Now that's ruby.story@gmail.com.
Susan, I'll weigh in on this a little bit. I know that you care a great deal about stories healing, and this is really a running topic. Leona asked that question, and I really am so pleased that she did. But we've had other people over the weeks ask us questions that are similar to it, about journal writing, about the fact that they get rid of their raw emotions, about they feel less paralyzed, less debilitated once they tell a story. Shed some light on this, because I know you care a great deal about this too.
Well, I also find ancient stories to be very healing, and I think that because the reason is that we encode deep wisdom in these stories that have been passed down for hundreds and sometimes thousands of, you know, over 1,000 years, some of these stories that I tell. I think that they tell us that these are universal experiences, that we're not alone, and they can show us examples of how other people have dealt with crises that can kind of percolate within us until we need that wisdom.
Yeah. Have you ever kept diaries, journals, things like that? Yeah.
Yes.
And you find that very helpful.
But I also find that some of the stories that my grandmother told me have bounced back into my mind after she had passed away, mm-hmm. when I was in a different stage of life.
Yeah.
And I realized that she was telling me those stories just so I could remember them at times like this.
Right.
And if she had just told me the moral of the story, it wouldn't have stuck with me. It would have been in one ear and out the other.
Right.
But she gave me the story, and it continued to teach me after she was gone.
Yeah, and that's a wonderful insight. And I think that people in our generation, and I mean this in the kindest sense of the word, we're given the gift of stories, because so many things that I remember that I turn to in order to solve my own problems in my own life were anecdotes and stories given to me by my grandmother in particular. My grandfather was a very quiet man, but he had his own narratives that he shared with me frequently. But the stories that my grandmother shared with me were really the sorts of things that I have used all of my life to solve very real problems and to feel good about the outcomes. Roxy, what about you? You ever think about using a story to solve a problem?
I feel like stories do help me solve problems. You know, I know that recently, you know, I've been having my hardships, and I'm talking to friends about it, and they tell me stories of, you know, how they can relate. And, you know, that's where I feel like some of the best advice comes from, is personal stories.
Yeah, and we've had so many wonderful, wonderful examples of that on this show. I keep thinking about Katie Galloway, you know, I'm talking about a month ago, young lady who was on the air, and she said that the thing that is most meaningful to her is this menu that she got from the House of Pies, because and it was one of Jay's students, and Jay Staley, a gentleman who's been on here several times, and she said that the reason why the menu means something is because when she was sexually assaulted, she went to the House of Pies to talk about it with her friends, and the waitress looked at them with great empathy and brought them some pie and coffee, and, you know, it sounds so simple, but she was so comfortable about talking about her sexual assault, and then she talked about her brother dying within a year, and how her brother loved the mugu pie, and they hated it, her and her friends, but they had a slice in honor of him. Now, this is a story that was more heart and soul than anything I could ever imagine. You know, these stories come from certain seeds, and that one came from her soul and her heart at the same time.
Yes.
But I saw her feel healed, literally, as she was telling that story. As it unfolded, it just worked beautifully.
Nice.
Next week, we're actually going to have a guest that's going to be talking about that a little bit more, someone that Roxy ran into. It is Rabbi Laura Scheinhoff, who will be here next week, and she is a real hoot, and she's terrific. And by the way, any of you talking about a hoot who wants something to do in Austin this weekend, check this out. If you go to Austin this weekend on the 8th, make sure you go to the Butterfly Bar at 2307 Manor Road to listen to Sex Stories. You heard that right, Sex Stories. I promised this friend of mine, Sadie, that I would tell her about it. She does a sex story on storytelling in Austin. Thank you, Susan Gallagher, for your stories and your perception, your passion. You're a role model teller as far as I'm concerned. And Roxy, thank you so much for pretending to find me funny and for being a little more articulate tonight. That was great. Scooter is in the studio. I see him there. He's getting ready to bring you the inner side. To complete the backside of this Power Hour on KPFT, make 90.1 a part of every day and make it a habit to tune in every Thursday at 10 for some What's Your Story and ease into the weekend right. Keep loving a great story, and I'm going to keep bringing them to you. Be good to each other. I'm Dr. Hank, reminding you,